We're dealing with the 6 days of creation first. And the three primary theories, and then we will prove from the scriptures that they are 24 hours. Number one, the 6 days of Genesis 1 are 6 ages, not literal days, but maybe thousands of years, maybe millions of years. All theistic evolutionists teach this. They're not literal days at all, but they are long geological ages. You want to see a classic illustration of that? Read Bernard Ramm's Harmony of the Scriptures and the Bible and Science. He is a theistic evolutionist. He doesn't like the word evolutionary as much, or the idea of being called an evolutionist, but he is. He'd rather be called a progressive creationist, as though that helps. That instead of an instantaneous creation, God took hundreds and billions, hundreds of millions of years and billions of years to gradually create. They try to relieve God of working too hard, seemingly, to create at one time, as though there were degrees of effort with God, who is omnipotent. The second theory is, another explanation is, that God could have created these geological ages in a moment of time. We'll come across this in the young earth theory. They have to admit that the earth gives evidence of longer periods of time than 6,000 years. And we're going to be dealing with this in our next division after we deal with the 6 days. One of the proofs that is being used is that in Adam and Eve, God had to create a memory of a life they never lived in order to be mature. God brought all the creatures before Adam by species, and he named them all. That shows a stored memory, something he never studied. A baby can be born with a tabula rasa or a blank mind, and then gradually have it by being taken care of by the parents, or gradually store it with useful knowledge until it can do more and more and finally become an adult. But Adam and Eve couldn't go through that process. Eve was not a tiny baby that God made and brought to Adam and said, "Here's your wife." She was a mature woman with all the intuitions, knowledge that a woman should have. They say that God created the geological ages in an instant of time, an age of the earth that the earth never had. Now, it's not a question of ability. God could do that. No problem. But did he? There's no indication from the Word of God at all. We'll be developing this whole idea a little later. And we'll also show that I believe in the gap theory, as Scofield has in his Bible, and everybody taught until here not too long ago, when the young earth theory began to be advanced. I do not subscribe to the young earth theory at all. I realize, as we said before, that some wonderful men, I admire them and I love them, Whitcomb and Morris, and the teachers at Dallas Theological Seminary, they're wonderful people. And they're not modernists, they're stalwart defenders of the faith. So I love them. But I believe they're wrong here. And we'll try to prove the gap theory. and see what's wrong with the other theory. Then a third one, and naturally I say this is the most plausible and certainly the one that fits all the scriptures, since it's one I defend, is the one that states that the geological ages come between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. The first verse of Genesis and the second verse of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And when we come to the next division, it won't be today, but probably starting in the next class, and we'll have quite a little discussion in there of how old the earth is. But in Genesis 1:1, God created a perfect creation. And that's scriptural, by the way. Not a chaos. The idea of God creating a chaos is heathenism. Actually, it started there. Almost all heathen philosophers believe in the chaotic theory, that the earth started as a chaos and then gradually developed by evolution into an ordered arrangement. We'll see a little later that God never created anything of chaos. Nothing ever came from God's hand to create a chaos. We shall see the preacher said that in Ecclesiastes also. He created everything perfect in his time as his creation. Any chaos is the result of sin in God's creation. Period. Not a creation of God Almighty. Now, just a little synopsis so we'll get started good. In Genesis 1:1, God created a perfect creation as it came from his hand, with a perfect angelical host. And in this angelical host was an anointed cherub. This belongs to the realm of angelology, but just to review. In this angelical host, one of the great rulers, principalities, governors, was headed up by Lucifer, the son of the morning, the anointed cherub that covered the throne of God. He was made the ruler of this earth as his primary domain. And in angelology, we consider two subjects that he had, sets of subjects. One was a third of the angels. You get that from Revelation 9:1. But there was another order of creatures called demons in the New Testament. You'll find this in Temer's Earliest Ages. I think put out very nicely. In angelology, we spent a long time on the subject of demons. As a pre-Adamic order of creatures, not humans. The first human ever created was Adam. The demons neither were made in the image of God, but they were earthly, soulish, physical subjects of Lucifer. He's called the ruler of the demons. They're not angels, for they used to have a body and seek embodiment. When Lucifer fell, his whole kingdom fell with him. Now, this is synopsis, introduction to our study of the gap theory. This is all prior to Adam. This is in Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. And naturally, then, we follow the Revised Version, we follow Rotherham, we follow a great number of translators. We don't follow the Young Earth translation in that second verse. And the earth became without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the roaring deep. I love Rotherham's translation of this Hebrew word, for that's certainly what it was. We'll try to prove this. That's what tohu and bohu in the Hebrew means, without form and void. We'll come across several translations of that Hebrew expression, these two words, But it gives the idea of a shoreless, dimensionless, raging, chaotic surface of the earth that probably had no shoreline, no dimension, and stretched out maybe thousands of miles out into space from the earth surrounding it. Storm lash, as most geologists, by the way, picture it. I have several geology books that picture it this way. And then, starting with the third, second verse, and the spirit brooded, incubated. The Latin word incubabat. Incubated over the face of the raging deep, or the roaring deep. Then comes the fire of creation, where God said, let there be, and there was. And we shall see three different Hebrew words used, which I think graphically shows that there were only three creative acts after the first verse of Genesis 1:1. Bara is only used three times in Genesis 1 and 2. Otherwise, it's just let there be and there was. Then it uses two other Hebrew words for fashioning over existing material. Not creative act. The young earth theorists are very big on this. Now that is in synopsis form for our future discussion with you along through here. The gap theory. It's been called by several other names besides the gap theory, and many of them we'll consider when we come to them. But the 6 days were only days of reformation besides those three creative acts, especially in man, where I use the word bara. B-A-R-A. So leaving the time of creation for a few minutes, a few lessons, one or two lessons, we want to take up the subject of the 6 days. Almost all, except for a few of the earlier theologians and Bible teachers, but almost all of the present day fundamentalists of the literal school of Bible interpretation, who don't spiritualize these first 10 chapters of Genesis, believe in the literal 24 hours of these 6 days each. You've got to do a lot of spiritualizing. You've got to do a lot of allegorizing. You've got to do a lot of twisting around to make these days anything but 24 hours. The young earth theorists, all of them believe, as we do, in these 24-hour days. They're not geological periods. They're not long evolutionary progressions until finally it took place. But they're literal 24-hour periods. I want to give you several reasons for believing this. First, there are many more we could use, but we'll use these that we're giving you here. Since the story of Genesis 1 and 2 is too far back in prehistoric times, well, these are fuzzy theories about the days first, and then I'll give you the other proofs that they are 24 hours, enlarging upon those three that we gave. First, here's one of the theories. Since the story in Genesis 1 and 2 is too far back in prehistoric times, it is entirely unrealistic as history. It belongs to the myth period. But it is like all other cosmogonies, pure guesswork, and therefore has no historical reference whatsoever. In other words, these class of people say, just forget it. Leave it alone. It's no theory of creation at all. It's poetry. Now, this is not a theory of creation, it's a denial of creation. Period. That's the first. Second, close akin to that one, and no better at all, the 6 days have been called topical pictures. Topical. T-O-P-I-C-A-L. Topical pictures. Kurtz calls them dreams. Wiseman calls them visions. All the new evangelicals do the same thing. It's not literal history at all. Spiritualize the first 10 chapters of Genesis. It's allegorical. As Carl Henry does in Christianity Today. In a article on cosmogony. All the so-called neo-orthodox, like Tillich and Barth and so many others, call it the same thing. Neo-orthodox means either new or almost orthodox. And they're not. Any more than the new evangelicals are either new or evangelical. But you know what new evangelical means? The word evangelical comes from the Greek word euangelion, and it means gospel. So it's a new gospel. I wonder what Brother Paul thinks of that. But to them, the 6 days are not literal, but epical, idealistic, pictorial. And almost every one of those words Rand used in his book. That is, God reveals the 4 to 6 billion years of creation in 6 pictorial periods of time. Not real days, but pictures of days. You'll see that they don't try to explain the 7th day at all, just the 6 days. So Kurt says they are not literal days of 24 hours, but geological ages. They explain that the 6 days are figurative days or epics, written upon 6 epical tablets called days. Well, there's no scripture for any of this. It's just plain dreams. Third, akin to that one, just an early church myth, many say. Allegorical teaches spiritual truth, not historical or literal. They're not real events at all. But just spiritualization. Then fourth, very common, the 6 days of geological ages. We've already said this, of course. Not 24 hours. I have several books in my library that develop this theme of geological ages. And of course, the primary idea in all of this is to reconcile it with evolution. What is the problem with this till evolution came along? But there is no way in the world that you can reconcile the story in Genesis of creation with evolution. They're not both true. One's a lie. If evolution is true, the scriptures lie in the story of creation. It's an amazing thing that there is not one proof of evolution whatsoever, and yet they're willing to throw out the Bible for evolution. That shows something wrong with their, not only their think tank, but their spirits too. Their spiritual nature has something wrong with them. But in the last two theories, one is by the young earth theorists, and then the gap theory that we've been mentioning. Under number 5, the 6 days are literal 24-hour days of actual creation. All the universe was created in 1 week. That's the young earth theory. Now, no gap theory, remember. No creation way back there billions of years ago, but 6,000 to 10,000 years ago, the 6 days are actual original creation itself. In those 6 days, God created the whole thing. Not just man, but the heavens and the earth. That's the whole teaching of the Young Earth Theory. And it's being taught more and more. Now, this is not an old teaching, it's a new teaching. I admire their reason for teaching it. It is to try to combat the hundreds of millions of years needed by the evolutionists and the uniformitarian idea that everything has been progressing upward by stages of evolution through natural law. God has nothing to do with it except maybe a controlling factor. But no immediate creation. Many of them will allow God to make the initial creation of all matter and energy and then turn it loose to work itself out. But the Young Earth theorists believe in none of this, and they're trying to combat it. Dallas Theological Seminary has become a, and that's only recently, by the way, since the Whitcomb and Morris and these others have started the Science Research Association. I have a lot of the old writings of Dallas Theological Seminary in the Bibliotheca Sacra. I took it for a great number of years and enjoyed it because it had some very, very deep theological writings in it. And they subscribed to the gap theory until just within probably the last 25 or 30 years. And now some of the greatest defendants of the Young Earth theory are teachers at Dallas Theological Seminary and the president of Dallas Theological Seminary. But Whitcomb and Morris in the Genesis Flood, if you want to look at the Young Earth Theory in probably it's one of its most concise forms, you'll find it in their book, The Genesis Flood, and you'll enjoy the book. And you'll say, what is that little two-bit theologian doing arguing with such men as this? These men are brilliant men. But I believe they're relying a little bit too much on some of their deductions from science and not enough on Scripture. And I'll try to prove this as we come to it. But don't by any means denigrate these men as modernists or unbelievers or anti-biblical. Nothing like that at all. It's just a matter of interpretation. Is the earth, all of it, only 6,000 years old? Did God only start to create this earth 6,000 years ago? And are these 6 days the original creation? Or are they rather a reformation after there has been a deformation from the original formation? And remember, the gap theory is creation, destruction, and recreation, or reorganization. The Young Earth theory is no destruction of any original creation at all. God created the chaos. And then in the 6 days of formation, that's the starting of the whole thing that he created. Now, we'll see in the various things we find wrong with the Young Earth theory, their angelology is awful weak because they have no place in this creation for the devil and his fall. Of course, the sixth theory is the gap theory again, or the catastrophe theory. God created perfect and then came a catastrophe. It overthrew the whole thing. Then God, in the 6 days, recreated or reformed, refashioned out of that chaos that came when Lucifer fell. When I went to Bible school and studied angelology and cosmology, There wasn't any young Earth theory at all. Almost everybody who believed the literal believed in the gap theory. Almost everybody. Now, it may have been the great influence of Dr. C.I. Schofield, I do not know, and the Schofield Bible. But the young Earth theory is also a young theory. Not old at all. Now, first, let's see if the days of Genesis 1 are literal 24-hour days before we consider how old the Earth is. Are they geological ages or are they 24-hour solar days? Now, there's no question of would it be easier to make it in 24 in a second of time, or in 7 days. But did he? If God couldn't make it in 24 seconds, he couldn't make it in 24 hours or 24 billion years. The Hebrew yom, Y-O-M, translated day, in Genesis 1 and 2. The Hebrew yom, Y-O-M, translated day, occurs 1,181 times in the Hebrew Old Testament. 1,181 times. There are 67 times that it occurs in the general sense of a period of time and not 24 hours. It's not a very good percentage when you consider the preponderance then belongs to the 24-hour period. But out of the 1,181 times in the Hebrew Old Testament, there are only 67 times when it occurs in the general sense of a period of time. Like the Day of Jehovah, which is not 24 hours, it's 1,000 years long. As a day is with the Lord is 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is a day. There the word Yom, no doubt at all, is 1,000 years long. Times along the same general vein, today if you hear his voice, harden not your heart. Where it's a period of time. It could be a second, it can be this present day to day, it can be this present time, this week. But today if you hear his voice, harden not your heart. But over 1,000 times. It is used of a 24-hour day and can't mean anything else. Other places in the Hebrew. Again and again and again, we shall see like the Sabbath day, which can't be a long period of time. It's 24 hours. The seventh day. Well, let's see a number of reasons why it has to be a 24-hour day and not a long period of time, geological ages. First, wherever yom, or day, is used with a qualifying numeral, either cardinal or ordinal, as the first day, second day, 3 days and three nights, it is always, literally, 24-hour day. I know of no exception. They argue since it is sometimes used for an indefinite period, it must be indefinite here. But you can't build a doctrine on that. That's the wrong argument completely. Since it's used almost a little over 100 times in a general sense, the other 1,000 must be general too. You get in a lot of trouble if you try that the other 1,000 times. And you're wrong when you use it here. We should see why. Second, the first one to remember is if it's used with a cardinal, any kind of qualifying number, either cardinal or ordinal, it has to be 24 hours. This is what's called in hermeneutics usus frequendi, common usage in the Bible. not your wishes. The evening and the morning were the first day. The evening and the morning were the second day. The evening and the morning. Why in the world use evening and morning if it's 1,000 years or 1,000,000,000 years? Evening and morning, and notice it starts with evening, because that's the Hebrew way of reckoning time. The Hebrew day starts at 6 o'clock in the evening, and goes to 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. That's the Hebrew day. That's why it's not morning and evening like we say it. Our day doesn't start that way. Our day starts really at 12 o'clock midnight till 12 o'clock midnight. So it's morning first and then evening. But not the Hebrew, it's evening and morning. The Hebrew day is always, and you're going to get in trouble in the New Testament if you don't remember this. It starts at 6 o'clock in the evening and goes to 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. That's why they wanted to take Jesus off the cross before 6 o'clock Friday evening, so his body would not stay on the cross over the Sabbath day. For the Sabbath day started at 6 o'clock in the evening, Friday evening. That's why Friday was called the day of preparation. And John tells you that Christ was crucified on the day of preparation, because they had to prepare for the Sabbath day, since they weren't supposed to light a fire, carry any burden, prepare any food. It had to be prepared on Friday, the day of preparation. So when here in Genesis 1, it says the evening and the morning were the first day, and so on, it shows that it had to be a literal 24-hour day. Or it's nonsense to call it that, if it was a geological age. Third, where did the idea of the week start of 7 days? Each for 24 hours, if it didn't start here. As when God blessed the seventh day and made it a time of the rest. Man wasn't to rest 1,000 years. He was to rest over the day that God ordained here, the Sabbath day. Man has found out ever since this is the best arrangement you can get. It's not to work 7 days a week or work 30 days and then take one day off. Man, laboring man, needs this one day a week to recuperate all of his spent forces throughout the week. Not just sleep at night. Of course, that was before TV. You don't sleep much at night anymore. And before electric lights. The order of 7 days, the only place you can find it is here for the week. It's not in the stars. It's not in the planets. It's not in the sun and the moon. The idea of a rhythmic 7 day week, and then start all over again. 6 days to work, a day of rest, and of course God intended it to be a day also of worship, which brings spiritual recuperation, as the day of rest brings physical recuperation. And of course man has turned a holy day into a holiday. The week had to be started from right here in the week of recreation. The text you should put down here, and you read it, is Exodus 28:11 to prove it. That text is very conclusive about this. And it can't be any geological period in Exodus. 28:11. Exodus 28:11. And I want you to read it, but I'm not going to read it now. We don't have time. But you'll see that the week of 7 days of 24 hours each started here at creation. Not in the law or anywhere else. God refers back to it. Fourth, Adam was created on the sixth day. If it were a geological age, then he lived through the seventh. If it were 1,000,000,000 years or 1,000,000,000 years or 4,000,000,000 years. You'd have to be a pretty old man. I realize death hadn't come into it yet, but after Adam's creation, and we shall see even after the sun and moon and stars began to control things, it had to be 24 hours. Number five, from the very first day, there was the division between light and darkness marking the days. Light and darkness. The evening and the morning were the first day, and the sun and moon and stars ruled the day and the night. Can't be a geological age. Well, the day would be millions of years long, and the night billions of years long. The sun wouldn't be ruling them. Along with that, look at Genesis 1, 4, and 5. And God divided the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the fourth day. Had to be 24 hours. If the sun was going to rule one part of it, the moon the other part of it. Yes? Yes, because until God began to divide the chaotic condition on the face of the earth between waters above the earth, the firmament, and the waters below the firmament, and the land from the ocean, and so on, you couldn't have this. There was a roaring darkness and flashing lightning in the whole situation until God began to bring this order out of the chaos. And number six, verse five, and God called the light day, and the darkness night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. Here's the very plain common sense interpretation of the language, understood by every one of the common people for whom the Bible was written. There can be gotten no hidden, obscure meaning of geological ages or of emergence out of some chaotic, evolving universe for a little 24-hour day. And then number seven, if the 6 days are millenniums or billions of years, then so is the seventh. Well, they all have the same identical connotation. This evening and morning were the first day, the evening and morning were the seventh day. The Sabbath would have to be billions, millions of billions of years long also. God would have to rest then for the billion years or so, and man also would have to rest for a billion years or so. Everywhere in Scriptures, the seventh day in the Bible is a 24-hour day of rest. Don't confuse this with the rest of God in the fourth chapter of Hebrews, where there remaineth a rest for the people of God. And it is the word sabaoth. Sabaoth, I think it is in the Greek. Sabaoth in Hebrew. Look at 2, 1 through 3 of Genesis. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the hosts of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work. In common sense reading, what does that mean? Saturday. Seventh day after he started. He started on Sunday morning in his creation, the first day, starting really with Saturday evening at 6 o'clock until Sunday evening at 6 o'clock was the first day of the week. And he labored for 6 days and nights, 24 hours, in all of creation, bringing everything back out of chaos into order. And then he rested on the seventh day and hallowed it. And ever since, it is the Sabbath. And it has to be 24 hours long. Now, there are a lot of other arguments we could use for the 24-hour period. Some of them are very, very graphic. For instance, you could put for number 8. How could the trees and grass and all vegetation grow for one day on the third day for millions of years without any sunlight? which came on the fourth day. You go back and look at that. The grass was created on the third day. Without this ordered arrangement on the fourth day. This portion shows that the sun, moon, and stars were already created in 1-1, only needing God's Asah, A-S-A-H, instead of Bela. Not to create them, but to fashion them into an orderly arrangement. Another one could be used, the genealogical tables in Genesis, purport to give Adam and his children to the flood. And they have to be literal years and literal days. I want to start, anyhow, with our young earth versus old earth. There's much material on it that we could give, since there are so many good men, sound men in the faith, fundamentalists, men of great learning that advance the young earth theory. I feel like we ought to deal with it here. The primary thing, it wouldn't make much difference to me either way, young earth, old earth. If it were not that the young earth theorists are advancing a lot of problems that are unnecessary. A lot of problems that are unnecessary. Earth gives evidence of great age. And we should consider fossilized light a little later. And they've had to answer that by that immediate creation of geological ages, that instead of actually the years passing, millions and billions of years, God created the geological ages in an instant of time. But they're having difficulty arguing with paleontologists, geologists, over fossils, and I'm going to show you that many of the fossils could not have lived either from Adam to the flood or since. They exist on the earth before the flood and before Adam. I'll give you a number of reasons why. And remember, these fossils are not dreamed up by the paleontologists. The paleontologists are one who deals in bones, prehistoric bones. They didn't dream up these fossils. Now, it is true that when you come to man, the fossils of man, like the Neanderthal man and so on, they dreamed those up. They're made sometimes out of about 2 ounces of bones and $1.50 worth of plaster of Paris, and then $2 million worth of imagination. Don't let them kid you about all of their reconstructed missing links. As we'll say in anthropology class, that one of the primary things about the missing links are that they're still missing. And they're not links. But since the young earth theorists raised this issue and, to my mind, really make difficulties where none exist, I believe the gap theory was a better explanation of it. The gap theory actually agrees with the Bible in angelology, and it agrees with the Bible in many texts, we shall see, where God distinctly said he didn't create the chaos. Isaiah said so. Jeremiah said he didn't. We'll come to those texts. But when did God create the earth? We'll only really introduce the subject now, and then in our next lesson we'll go into it in detail, and probably have to take a couple of lessons in it or more, because of its importance. We both believe in divine creation. Creative act of God. I don't actually appreciate the Science Research newsletter in equating all the gap theorists almost with evolutionists. They seem to make no difference, like I do them and evolutionists. They're not evolutionists. They're trying to get creationism in the schools, and I'm all for it. To my mind, if they're going to teach a wild theory of evolution in the school instead of so-called science, then they should put all the theories in. You could teach Hinduism and Buddhism and Zoroastrianism, and you could teach anything else in the world in the public school except the Bible. You could tell who's controlling the educational system. It's Lucifer the liar from the beginning. Now, second, now we're both using the Bible, the young earth theorists and the gap theorists. But second, there is no doubt at all from every genealogical table in the Bible that man himself has not been on earth for somewhere around 6,000 years. Now remember, I might as well say it here, I've got it somewhere else in my notes, but I might as well say it here. And of course in anthropology we'll be crossing paths here again, but we cannot follow Archbishop Usher real accurately because in the Hebrew genealogical tables, as proven from the first chapter of Matthew, where there are three sets of 14s for a young man to memorize on his, in his own geological table. Everyone had to memorize his own genealogy. They were kept in the temple. But you couldn't go to the temple all the time to determine your genealogy. And you not only wanted your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddad, you wanted back to Adam. We shall see the importance of this in Christology, but in order to be able to do this, they skipped generations every once in a while, and they did in Jesus' genealogy there. Second, in the patriarchal home, remember, four and five generations, and when they lived to be so old, maybe dozens of generations lived in the same household. And the eldest member of the household was the high priest of the house. And he was called the father of everybody in that house. They could be five or six generations down the line, but he was still the father of so-and-so. The Hebrew had no word for grandfather. None at all. There's none in the Hebrew language for grandfather. This has made a lot of people make errors in the book of Daniel in trying to interpret. For instance, when Belshazzar was called the son of Nebuchadnezzar when he wasn't, he was the grandson. There's nothing wrong with that. That's Hebrew genealogy. We have reckoning. You could see this if in my own household I were 150 or 250, I feel like that sometimes, or 500 years of age, and I kept adding wings on the house as the kids came along, and then the grandkids, I had another wing. The first thing you know, you got wings all over the place. You can imagine that if you live to be 500 years of age, you may have 1,000 descendants living around the house very close. You would dab a whole crowd. You can see how this messes up some genealogy tables. I don't have a bit of trouble in the world if they could prove that, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the man had been on the earth for 10,000 years. You know, I don't think it's any longer than that, and the genealogy tables make it very difficult. I mentioned that the other day, and maybe in just the time in closing, let me mention it again. And see if we can come to find it. Have it right here. I just cut it out of the paper again the other day, or out of the U.S. News and World Report. It took up till 1830 from creation. Up to 1830 to make a billion people on the face of the earth. A billion. I get that. In other words, it took 4,800 years from Noah and the eight souls in the ark to make a billion people. But it only took till 1930, 100 years for another billion. Now this is amazing. This is what's called the population explosion. And it's built into the human race. It's not just a new thing. In spite of all the wars, all the famines, all the catastrophes, all the divine judgments of God Almighty, it took 6,000 years to get the first billion. 1830. It took only 100 years for the second billion. The third billion, it took only 50 years. 1980 for the third billion. They say by 1990 we'll have 5 billion, and by 2000 there'll be 6 billion. Did you know if man were any older than the flood, really? I mean, for that, everybody was slain in the flood except the eight souls. And they don't believe, remember, the unbelievers don't believe in the flood either. Universal flood. The world couldn't contain the people in it. All the demographers are worried about population explosion. How are we going to feed everybody? If man were on the earth 1,000,000 years, could the earth hold the people in it? Unless catastrophe took everybody off every once in a while. There is one more thing in closing. The young earth theorists tried to replace all the catastrophes at the flood. All the great evidences of the earth. The earth shows great catastrophes worldwide. When the mountains were squeezed up, the great declivities in the ocean were scooped out. Great overthrusts, like the St. Andrews Fault in California, where a great layer of the earth's crust comes up over on top of another one, and they stay there for a long time, straining at each other, and then the earthquake caused by a sudden giving away. And they say California's due another one, even greater than the great San Francisco earthquake about 100 years ago. The earth shows great cataclysmic catastrophes. Now this is against evolution and its uniformitarianism, which has no iota of proof whatsoever. The very fact that there are great coal deposits, some of them 3 or 4 miles underneath the earth, we'll see a little later. There was a time, sometime in Earth history, when the South Pole was a paradise of tropical climate. We'll explain that a little later by the canopied earth. There is coral and sequoia trees at the South Pole. And the trees are standing upright in the ice. I'll show you several so-called scientific explanations of it, but they won't work. They don't fit. I wish every one of you had Villostovsky's Earth in Upheaval. I think it's the best work he ever gave. He wasn't a Christian. He was a Jew in Central Europe. But like McCree Price's New Geology, his works haven't been able to be controverted. The earth shows great catastrophes.
I don't believe these catastrophes took place at the flood. I believe they took place in Genesis 1-2. And the earth became without form and void. When God overthrew this whole thing, when Lucifer fell, its Lord, and it became a howling waste, a wild, shoreless desolation, without form and void, and darkness ruled over the whole thing, the raging gate. You cannot put these catastrophes at the flood. The flood was worldwide. It caused the last great glacial period. I don't have any doubt about that at all. When all of Africa, Europe, and the United States was covered with frozen ice. This is what carved out the Grand Canyon. This is what made the great movable boulder, some of them bigger than this auditorium, carried them for sometimes hundreds and hundreds of miles. And you could see the stridations along the side of the cliffs where they were carried by rushing water. This couldn't get the flood. I'll try to prove this as we go along. This was in this great chaos that took place, not at the flood, but in Genesis 1-2. And we'll start from there. If you have any material at all, you should read up on some of this. Some of you might have some of these books and become familiar with it. You're dismissed.